Hey everyone, welcome to the Slice of Healthcare podcast. This is our new dental focus show. I am joined by Janesh Patel, the co-founder and CEO at Uptime Health. Janesh, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good to meet you, Jared. Yeah. I remember us talking a little bit in the past, and I'm loving the fact that we're in dentistry now.
I know. It's been a while. Always great to catch up with you. Let's start by, let's assume the audience maybe hasn't heard of you and Uptime. Give them a quick breakdown of your background, and then we'll talk a little bit about Uptime Health.
Sure. My background is I'm a biomedical engineer. I did device design early on, got my MBA, became what they call a clinical engineering manager for a health system. And that's where I got to learn how to take care of equipment, how to make sure it was always up and running, run a team of technicians, as well as work with department leaders to understand like what are the next devices or technology they're going to buy and inform it based on what we can do to service and maintain it. So that's kind of my background. Uptime Health, that was a derivative of that, based on the fact that we started acquiring a lot of urgent cares and, you know, healthcare started shifting to the outpatient and in-home spaces. What I learned was when we started evaluating those kinds of environments, it was really hard to talk to somebody that knew really what they were doing about equipment in those facilities, because it's chock full of nurses, doctors, and, you know, medical assistants, and they're really good at patient care. But they didn't have somebody like me on site because it didn't make financial sense, you know, based on just maybe the $500,000, $250,000 of assets they had in their facilities to have a full-time person taking care of it. So Uptime Health is born out of the need to have a tool or something help those kinds of clinical environments manage their equipment. So today we have a software tool that helps people first understand, what do I own? Based on what I own, how do I take care of it? So what are the daily, weekly, monthly things I should be doing? What are the planned maintenance or proactive, you know, replacements I should be doing to keep this thing up and running? And if something breaks down, they can use our tool to dispatch their service group or engage in a marketplace of service vendors to take care of their stuff. And the last thing that we do is, since it's going through our product, we can evaluate things like, how old is that machine? How often does it fail? Because we know how every time you're clicking that button for request repair. And how much does it cost to continue to maintain this? And when does it make sense to replace it instead of continuing to band-aid an old device? So our product just helps automate a lot of what we consider equipment management for people who aren't necessarily experts in that, but are really good at patient care.
And I think one of the coolest parts about, you know, what you've built and what you've continued to build on is people don't want to deal with this. They want your help. They want to be able to, you know, see everything in one platform and be able to know exactly where everything stands. And, you know, I know as in the early days when I were first talking, you were urgent care, and then you decided, okay, we're going to focus on the dental space. What was it initially about the dental space that kind of drew you in to be like, we want to focus on this space? This is the bigger opportunity for us here.
That's a good question. You know, they say, you know, how much of what you build is, you know, luck and seeing a pathway versus, you know, forecasting it ahead of time. It was honestly COVID that made us switch our industry's focus. So we first started, like you said, urgent care and surgical centers. They were very close to my background, so I knew how to talk to them, what kind of devices they used, without having to retrain myself. When COVID hit and we started realizing we couldn't talk to urgent cares or surgical centers because they're too busy firefighting, you know, the big pandemic, and they're not trying to deploy new technology, even though we could help them with ventilator management, we started putting a list together of all of the people who fit our ICP, or our ideal customer profile, which is essentially people who take care of patients that use medical equipment to do so, that are so small that they don't have somebody in-house like me to help them out. So with that kind of framework, you start having dentistry, optometry, veterinary, laboratory, med spa, dermatology. The list started actually becoming extremely long. And that was exciting for us because we're like, well, actually our TAM and our opportunity is much larger than we initially thought when we started this idea. But, you know, where do you focus? And so we started realizing our product is sold on a subscription level by location. So we just said, how many locations are in each one of these segments? I was completely shocked when I saw the number of dental offices that exist in the United States. Because again, going into that urgent care and surgical mindset, there might be 10 to 12,000 urgent cares in the US. You know, that's kind of oldish data, so maybe it's 15,000 maximum by now. surgical centers, it's probably between like 6 and 9,000. There's 120,000 dental offices. That's 10x the number of locations in the industries that we were currently focused in. So for me, as somebody who knew they were going into a new vertical that had a lot to learn, know the jargon, know the players, know the needs, I was going to not be, you know, successful day one. So what is a market that's big enough? What it gives me the opportunity to learn, but if I'm, you know, struggling along the way, I'm not going to burn the entire market. And so dentistry, the opportunity is so vast that even if I, you know, accidentally messed up in the first 10, 20 locations that we might have looked at just from a learning perspective, there's still 120,000 plus other locations to go after. When in urgent care, that's kind of not the case because, you know, they're consolidated more and, you know, it spreads rapidly in there.
It's interesting too with the dental space, because I feel like you can have for urgent care, we started seeing this a lot the last couple of years, right, where the health system owns the urgent care. It's not like necessarily a separate thing anymore. And obviously selling into health systems is not easy. It is,
yeah,
you want to bang your head on a desk opportunity, you sell to health systems. But the dental space, which is kind of interesting, every one of these dental practices, there's so many independent practices as well, and they run so lean. There might be someone at the front desk, right? And then there's maybe a few hygienists and maybe one, possibly two dentists even at every location, right? So they need tools that make their life easier because they don't have time to spend extra hours and making sure that everything is, you know, up to date. So, but they have to still. It is so important for compliance and everything. So in the early days, though, so I guess here would be a challenge, right? There's opportunities that you can sell into where it is one company that owns lots of dentistry practices, but you still sell into those individual opportunities as well, right?
Yeah, and that's actually a good point. When we first looked at the dental market, we didn't know the landscape. We didn't know what a DSO really was. Now we know it's, you know, a kind of a group practice and with the leadership organization out there that manages a bunch of independents, and sometimes they're standardized and sometimes they're not. Then there's the single doc offices. And then you even have, call it your smaller offices, might have like 4 to 6 operatories. Then you have almost like these dental hospitals. I'm going to call it that. I don't know if that's the right jargon, but they have 20 to 30 operatories. They're just gigantic. And so like we started realizing all the shapes and sizes of these. So yes, our product does work for everybody. When it came to really understanding who's going to need us as a must-have versus a nice-to-have, it's really the groups. It's the people who have to manage multiple locations and therefore multiple equipment across a large territory that doesn't have that day-to-day visibility that maybe a doctor does, because they can kind of see in their single office what's going around, what looks broken. They can talk to their front desk person before they go in saying, hey, how's everything going? And they can give them all the updates. Versus if you're the compliance or the equipment manager at these big DSOs, you don't have that day-to-day visibility. So you might have to have that surface up to you, and that might take time. And sometimes people don't really notice, because when you get bought, just like everybody else knows, you sometimes lose that closeness to your own product because it's somebody else's problem now. I'm already sold. I'm already somebody who's made their paycheck, and I'm just here, you know, making sure that my existing business does well and same with my patients, but I don't care as much about that device I bought because it's no longer my problem. So I think from the DSO perspective, we saw a lot more opportunity, and that's why we focused there.
Let's talk about, you know, some of those early challenges. We all face them as entrepreneurs. Anyone who says they don't have challenges is lying. Yeah. Let's talk about some of yours and maybe how you moved past those in the early days. Obviously pivoting, that was a challenge. You passed that with flying colors. I think it was, you'll agree, it was an amazing move for you. Let's talk about some of those other challenges.
Yeah, I think one of the things I had to learn was dentistry, as big as it is with that 120,000, you know, location number, it's actually very small, meaning everyone kind of knows everybody. And they're a tight-knit community that talks, shares best practices. It's kind of a nice awakening from, you know, maybe what I was used to in the medical world, where you don't see it as often. And maybe if it was there, it's just not so pronounced like it is in dentistry. So I think one of the initial hurdles was, how do you get into that club of being one of the trusted companies, groups, or products that people love and rave about, and then that organic word of mouth or snowball effect takes effect, there was a large, trust hurdle that we had to pass. So I think that was one of the first things that we had to learn was we must engage with these people at their level, learn their business, make them realize that we're here as good actors. We're not here to make a quick buck then leave. Because I think, some people feel that way when it comes to brand new technology. Are they going to be there next year? So the way we went about trying to solve that problem is we started going to their trade shows and their conferences. Because we learned, just like in medical, that's where they absorb a lot of their knowledge. And if you think about how busy these dentists are and these DSOs are, they're running at 1 million miles an hour day to day. And the only time they can lift their head up to see what are the new technologies and let me go educate myself are the conferences. So that's the first place to engage and where they'll actually give you some bandwidth mentally to say, I'm actually going to listen to what you say versus go away. I don't have time for you right now. So we went to the first couple of conferences. We put a list of all the ones we went out there. We actually had a resource in Group Dentistry Now, which was where we kind of went to see where all the trade shows were for DSOs, as well as some of the other, like the ADAs, they have their own trade shows like, Yankee Congress and Chicago Midwinter. So we actually went to almost every single one of them in the first year. So in the year of 2022, anyone we could find, we went to. And that way, when we first got to learn who are the other vendors in the space, because you see all their trade show booths, you walk up to them being like, what do you sell? Why do you sell it? So you just kind of educate yourself on like who the other vendors are in the space and why they exist. But then you also get to talk to people who are walking the floors and, they see you at one show. They see you at the next show. They see you at the next show. They see you at the next show. And then you become kind of this, well, this guy's everywhere. And like their product seems to still be around. They're not like leaving us and they're trying to learn. And I would say that was the best thing we could do to really get the trust of the, call it the industry, which is like, we weren't trying to be there like one show, try and sell as many things and go kind of put your head back down in the sand and build product. It was, let's continue to show people we're here for them. To learn with them, to be there where they learn their education, so we can listen to all the education topics going around. So in the, whenever the interest rates started going up for when the banking crisis happened, and we started hearing like what their struggles were, we could start positioning our product from a sense of the struggles that they were talking about day to day. So I think that's how we got over that trust hurdle, which is we care about what you care about, and we're putting our honest effort to doing that.
I love it. And you have, we'll talk about it right now, cool opportunity coming up, which naturally nothing crazy, right? But there will be you that will bring another challenge for you. It's a good challenge to have, right? But you are acquiring a new company. We don't have to go into the name or anything yet. I know you haven't announced yet. Talk me through how, you're thinking through that new, I don't want to call it a problem. It's more of an opportunity than a problem, right? Because you need to worry about integration, both with the team and everything that they're doing. How are you getting into that mindset about, where are you going to take this from there?
No, it's a good question. Because yeah, we'll announce it probably, in the next few weeks. So I don't want to ruin any spoilers just yet. But you're right. We have this opportunity to acquire a company. That's really going to help us. And by help us, that means it's going to help our clients. So what we did is we realized, okay, what does our product miss? Like we're out of all the things we're building and all the things on our roadmap, some things are naturally, 2 or 3 years down the line because we just don't have the bandwidth to do everything tomorrow. But there's a lot of other companies out there that might have a point solution that can kind of plug in had it been the right opportunity to buy them or just work or partner with them. No one in the dental world that knows us, I don't think, would be surprised by this, where we do a lot of partnerships because we know we can't build the entire, perfect solution, but there are people who do it really well. So we'd rather partner than build on a lot of those kinds of things. So there's one partner of ours, one that we're potentially acquiring or we're in the process of acquiring right now, that had like 4 or 5 pieces that were part of our future roadmap that are really meant to enhance our client experience. So that means, they'd have better access to service. They would have better access to education modules in our product. We actually bring in a team of, like, call it experts who have been in the dental industry for 10, 20 years. So we bring in-house knowledge again. So there's so much of this 1 + 1 = 3 moment that happens here that it was an opportunity that we just couldn't pass up because we knew it would help us, but in turn, get our clients and our prospects to a place where they realize Uptime Health is realizing what we want and what we need, and to get it to them faster, they're making the necessary moves and investments to get it done. So I think it just shows, I hope it shows to them that we're listening and we're trying our hardest to meet their needs.
It's going to be a fun challenge for you. And you're coming at it from the other side. Like, obviously I went through it where I had to be integrated into the company, my last company, right when we got acquired. So it's I think it'll be a fun challenge for you. I think you'll crush it. It'll be an awesome position for the company to be in because of who you're getting and who you're getting involved with. I'm really excited to stay up to date with you on all things related to that and the company. What else is next? Like, what's next for you that really excites you about this space, about the opportunity that you are, that you have in front of you?
I think it's really the fact that now that we're called in the circle of trust, I'm not saying that in the sense of like we've won everybody over, but I think the industry starts realizing what we're doing is important and that we are good actors and what we're trying to accomplish with them, that they're allowing us to innovate with them. And I think that's what's exciting me. So a good example is, since our product helps people manage their equipment, well, today to, call it dispatch a service vendor, somebody has to go into our product and create a physical action. They have to click a button that says request service. Well, how do we get the doctors and the providers some of their time back? Well, can we remove that button click? So what we've done is, since we've convinced the industry that our product does work, which it does, but it works so well that if we can start working with manufacturers that have connected devices that are speaking to, call it a cloud layer that tells somebody back at the manufacturing office what's wrong with their machines. Like, what are the error codes? What are the things that are failing? Think about it like a car that tells you what's wrong with it, says, go get service. Well, equipment does that too. And we're now at the point where some of the leading manufacturers in the dental space are integrating with us. So if their product is in our product, like let's say it's a compressor, which if that fails, it can take down a whole office, which is, a lot of missed revenue, a lot of frustrated patients. If that compressor says, hey, I'm airing out, like I'm overheating, or my pressure's too high, or it's too low, whatever it might be. Well, what does that mean? It could mean that we have to replace this thing because we're seeing it trend in a terrible direction. Or if it's an error code that says, like, hey, to reset this error code, just to unplug it and plug it back in, it'll fix me. So our product is actually going to ingest these things and automate the action to correct it. So you're removing a human step in the process. So I think that's exciting to me, that these manufacturers are working with us and integrating their technology into our product. So when, again, technicians get dispatched, and if we say that's a component that needs to be replaced, well, we can tell the technician what component is that. So have it in your hand. So you're not going there to see it, go back to your shop, and then go back to fix it. We're saving three truck rolls. And the client now has their thing fixed the first time you're out there versus waiting 4 hours for the drive time. So I think it's the coolness as the industry sees these micro efficiencies, but they're so substantial that they're buying in, they're leaning in, and we're also doing the same thing on our end. So to me, that's the fun part ahead, is it's innovating with the people who I think have been waiting for us at some level, because no one's really cared about equipment management. It's always been patient workflow, RCM, whatever it might be, PMS systems. We're like this weird company that's focusing on that one problem that nobody ever focused on. So all those people waiting in the wings for somebody to focus on this solution, now they're jumping in with us because they finally see that we're making a wave. So I think that's what excites me about this year and next.
I love it. And I'm excited to stay in touch with you to kind of hear where things are at. And hopefully we can have you come back on again in the near future.
Anytime.